Hello, and welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Now grab a cup of coffee, sit back and enjoy some more of Adventure Number 8 by Jim Chappelle, and then we'll get on with today's show. Good morning, and welcome to Community Conversations. Today, I'm your host, Phil Huff, along with my co-host, Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Well, hello, Phil. How have you been?
Well, I've been good, and it's September. We're edging into fall, or we're rushing into fall, whichever it is.
We most certainly are, and I don't usually spend too much time talking about what I've been up to, but I do want to share with you that today I had just a wonderful fall day with some mutual friends of ours, Phil, the Harbucks, Susan and John, and our original plan had been that we would hike to a small peak in the Cabinets we've never hiked to before, Mount Clifty. I think you've heard of it. Mm-hmm. And our plans were foiled, Phil, because we went most of the way up 20 Mile Road and discovered that the county is installing a new culvert, and the delay waiting for them to be finished with that was 3 to 5 hours. So we had to, yes, I know. So we had to quickly change plans, and we changed from the Cabinets to the Selkirks and instead hiked to Bottleneck Lake, which was a lovely hike. So I'm barely back in the door and excited about our interview.
Well, that is a good story, and it's a good reminder to always be flexible. Those are some of the best adventures.
So true.
Things that happen along the way, and we adjust plans. And that's, I think, a good intro, launching point for our guest today, who has done numbers of adventures and undoubtedly has changed his plans along the way. Julie, why don't you take it from here?
Oh, I can't wait. Phil, I think we're really lucky today to be able to interview Mel Dick. I'm sure many residents of Sandpoint and the county know Mel. Mel is the owner of the 219 Bar, but he's many other things. He's a great volunteer. He's a great athlete, and he's an avid cyclist. Hello, Mel.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Great. Well, Mel is on. Oh, go ahead, Phil.
I was going to say, wonderful, Mel. How are you? You must be tired.
Well, it's about six. It's in the afternoon where I'm at. I'm on the East Coast. And I am a little tired. You were talking about fall is in the air. And not by my way of thinking of it. Every day I've ridden in the last week, it's been 90 plus, and the heat index is normally 102 or above.
Oh, my. Wow. And I've got to back up for just a moment because I've introduced Mel, but I haven't introduced our topic for today, which is long distance journeys. And this one is all about biking. Mel, you're biking across the USA and you're more than halfway there, aren't you?
I am. I'm currently in Pelham, Alabama. So I have basically two more states to go through before I reach the end of my journey in Key West, Florida.
Wow. So for the listener who's just figuring out that across USA means from somewhere in Idaho, tell us about the basic concept. Where from, where to, what route, and why?
Well, I started on August 1st in Sandpoint. And my ride has taken me through northern Idaho, western Montana, Yellowstone National Park, the Tetons, the state of Wyoming, all the way through the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, Kansas, Missouri, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Alabama so far.
Since August 1.
Since August 1. So I have ridden probably close to 3,000 miles. In roughly 35 days.
Yes, and now as a reminder to listeners, these are pre-recorded shows. So as we talk to Mel, it's only September 4th. You'll hear this at a later date, 35 days, 3,000 miles. It's quite a feat.
Yes, and he's going to be much further along by the time this interview airs.
So I gotta ask you, you said two more states. That means you're not just slipping right down to the panhandle of Florida where Alabama touches it. You're probably going through Georgia too then. Almost have to, well, if that's a third state.
I think I'm going to go through a little bit of Georgia and then into the northern part of Florida. And I'll actually ride quite a bit while I'm in Florida because I got friends throughout Florida that I'm going to visit both on the East Coast, the West Coast, things like that.
And the entire length of the ride you've calculated is going to be how long?
Well, my goal is to be in Key West on October 15th. I'm probably about 2 weeks ahead of schedule. It all depends on if I end up riding my goal of 5,000 miles or if I'm going to be somewhat less than that and how much time I take off between now and then. I've only taken one day off.
Well, Mel, I have to ask this question because both you and Phil are the same kind of crazy person that would go on an adventure by themselves or with another person that takes months and months and is extremely fatiguing and maybe impossible to finish, but maybe not. What makes a person decide to do something like this?
Well, I think it's, first of all, it's a big challenge. And something that, you know, I've been an avid bike rider my entire life. I used to ride my bike to school every day. I rode a lot when I first started working, and then the job got in the way, and I stopped for a number of years, but started back up in 2000. And it's really a passion. But the best part about this type of a journey is you're by yourself, you're totally supported. Every day is somewhat of a new adventure because you really don't know what you're getting into during that particular day. I don't really plan much more than 24 hours out on where I'm going to be going. And it's a great way to see the country in slow motion.
Go ahead.
Phil, I know you're a big hiker. But if you can imagine riding across the United States at about 5 to 12 miles an hour on average, you see, hear, and smell everything.
Yes. I can relate to that in many ways. I've always said that one of the joys of hiking is you slow down and you see, hear, smell more. When you're flying over states, you don't really get a sense of them. If you're driving through, you get something. And if you're hiking or biking, it's a whole lot more intimate. And my hiking's been north to south across the U.S. I've always said I don't think I have any interest in walking across the Great Plains. I'd have to be on a bicycle. So I may emulate you. But this isn't your first, as they say, rodeo, is this? You've done some long distance biking before.
No, I have. I retired from the corporate world in 2008. And as soon as I retired, I got on the same bike I'm riding this trip. And I rode 10,000 miles around the United States. Ended up in Key West as well. And that was a big challenge. I hadn't really done anything like this before. Since that time, I've done some other rides, but not, mostly 3 to 4 states. And then I've also participated for several years, either as a rider or a crew member of an endurance bicycle racing team we had in Sandpoint that rode for 5 years straight in the Race Across America, which is a much different deal. In that deal, you ride 3,000 plus miles in 7 days or less. So my 3,000 miles in 35 days is not much of a feat when you think about that.
But the Ride Across America, for the most part, well, your case at least, it was a team that did it. There's very few solo riders, right?
Yeah, there's few solo riders. We had teams, four teams that were four people, and then one eight-person team. And basically, when you're doing that ride, you're on your bike, you're riding for 8 to 10 miles at a time, and you are riding as hard as you can possibly ride 24/7. And you're supported. You don't have to worry. If you're a rider, you get on your bike and you ride when you're told to get on your bike. And you get off your bike and everything is taken care of for you. This trip's much, much different in that I am totally self-supported. I have a small trailer that has all my, everything from my camping gear to spare clothes to my personal computer, spare tubes, tires, you name it. I basically could live out of that trailer. And that trailer is affectionately known as Bob. And so Bob and I have had quite a journey. If you follow my blog, you'll see a new tire that I picked up on the road today for Bob on today's blog. And I think you'll enjoy that, or the blog for September 4th.
So why Bob?
Well, Bob is the name of the company that builds these trailers. It's literally called Bob. And when I started the journey, most people thought I was going by myself, but I started writing about Bob as though Bob was another writer, another person. And after about 2.5 weeks of people sending me texts, sending me emails, wanting to know if Bob was like a Wilson or was Bob my bike, I finally came clean and said Bob was my trailer.
So why a trailer and why not simply front, back, panniers?
I've done both kind of trips. The trailer makes it much, much easier to control your bike. A downside is you take way too much stuff because you got more space. And I actually almost got rid of Bob today and bought some panniers, but they didn't have them at the bike shop I went to because I'm tired of pulling Bob up and down the mountains and the hills. I really did not understand how many hills and how steep the grades are in the Ozarks, in Arkansas, and of all places, Alabama.
Yeah, Northern Alabama.
Northern Alabama has, between that and the Ozarks, probably as tough as any long mountain pass ride in Montana, Wyoming, or Colorado. A lot of that has to do with the fact that it is so hot and so humid, it's almost impossible to stay dry or hydrated.
Now, oh boy. I've had I've had friends who have taken long rides. I'm trying to think of the specific people I have in mind have ever done a cross country route, but certainly they've done multi-day, several hundred miles, yep, with nothing much more than a credit card in their pocket for resupply. They just stay in hotels and eat out of cafes, and they don't carry much other than the emergency gear.
So in my case, you know, I do stay in hotels. In fact, I'm in a hotel tonight. I do eat at least one good meal a day in a restaurant. Early on in the trip, the first 3 weeks, I camped a lot. I stayed at a lot of hostels and a lot of cheap hotels. As I got into the South, there's not near as many places to camp. The humidity is such that I'm not sure I could even sleep in a tent. You know, it seldom gets below about 75 to 80 degrees here at night so far.
Probably bug netting.
Sounds tough. And you've had hurricane weather too, haven't you?
I have. I changed my route when I knew that the hurricane was going to come up off of the Louisiana coast. And as a result, you know, my best plans didn't quite work out the way I thought they would. Had I stayed on my route, I probably would not have gotten the rain I did get because the weather patterns changed. Now, there has been a fair amount of after hurricane storms that have come through the south central part of the United States. And I've experienced my share of thunderstorms, getting drenched, lightning, that type of thing. But that's why I say every day is really a new adventure.
So let's dig in a little bit more specifically to why this particular route, why this particular ride.
Well, this particular route, you know, there's an organization in Missoula, Montana called Adventure Bicycling. And they've got about 50,000 miles of backcountry cycling routes throughout the United States. There's a major route that goes through Sandpoint called the Northern Tier, and you see a lot of cross-country riders coming through Sandpoint. That goes from Astoria, I'm sorry, it goes from Anacortes to Bar Harbor, Maine. There's another major route called the Trans Am Route, which is from Astoria, Oregon to Yorktown, Pennsylvania. Then there's a Southern Tier route from San Diego to St. Augustine. There's a route down the East Coast, a route down the West Coast, and then there's multiple side routes through multiple states. I've done a lot of the Trans Am route, the Northern Tier route, a little, all of the East Coast, a portion of the West Coast, but I'd never really done the Southern Tier route. Now, I will tell you, I had originally planned on riding to San Diego, and then going from San Diego to St. Augustine. When I started thinking about riding through places like Arizona in August and riding in California during COVID, I decided to change my route. And so I've been on the Trans Am route part of it. I've been on part of what's called the Underground Railroad route, where people helped slaves be free during the war. And I am going to pick up part of the Southern Tier route down in the panhandle of Florida.
Just to put this into perspective for listeners, our entire United States interstate highway system is less than 50,000 miles. I believe it's about 46,000. Mm-hmm. So when you picture those lines on the map and then think about overlaying the adventure cycling's routes, there's more of them.
And more of them is mostly backcountry, in some cases, county roads. One of the things that I discovered, and a lot of this has to do with COVID, on these small communities of 1,000 people or less, some of which businesses really rely on these cyclists that come through, there haven't been many cyclists coming through, and many things were closed. So I've I've deviated some from those routes to be on more major roads just so I wouldn't have to go 55 miles to find another drink of water.
Makes sense. Hey, Mel, when I think about planning for something like the Pacific Crest Trail, I think that's a pretty complicated planning process. You've got to get food mailed to post offices and that sort of thing. Explain how a bicycling trip compares to a trip like that. Is it a bit easier or not really?
Well, I'd say it's a bit easier. There is one route that's the Continental Divide route. And people do that the same way they're planning on a hiking trip. They mail stuff, they come off the Continental Divide route, they go into communities, pick up packages. I ran into a number of riders like that on this particular trip. On my kind of trip, you're really very dependent on gas stations, convenience stores, grocery stores, and small mom and pop restaurants in these small communities being open. And I did not anticipate what COVID meant to these small communities.
Yes, good point. You know, I'm looking at you, we're Zooming this interview, and your hair looks like it's been cut. You look pretty good. I see you in your biking outfit, and you don't look too terribly skinny. I mean, you're a thin man, but you don't look like you look like you might be getting enough to eat. So you've been faring all right anyway.
I have been. I got my hair cut the other day. I shaved for the interview today, so I'm all presentable. I've got an incredible biker's tan, or farmer's tan, if you will. Back to the food, you know, I consume between 5,000 and 7,000 calories a day. Because that's how many calories I'm burning. I haven't weighed myself since I left. I would guess I probably lost 15 pounds in the first month.
Wow. That is something most long distance adventures have in common. I want to hear more about, you touched on COVID, how this has impacted, what your observations are of how this has impacted the communities, how it's impacted rides like this in general, and of course yours in particular.
Well, there's a lot less riders out there this year because of COVID. There's a really great race called the Trans Am race, and that race got canceled this year. The Race Across America got canceled this year. The first 2 or 3 weeks, I ran into a lot of other cyclists, most of which were young people who had lost their jobs. A good example is a bartender, a hotshot bartender out of a New York city bar, got furloughed. That bar is not open yet. He got on his bike in March after he lost his job, and he has just been riding around the country. So there's been, I'd say, a pretty big impact of COVID. Surprisingly, depending on the state you're in, the vast majority of places require you to wear a mask. Many of the states have mandated mask requirements. Some jurisdictions are enforcing the mask wearing, some aren't. People are really social distancing. I have noticed that. And I would say people are taking it serious. At the same time, most people are just trying to live their lives. You know, they're trying to get through every day.
So the small towns along the way that would normally be visited by lots of bicyclists on these routes, are they relieved that they're not seeing an influx of people from out of town? Are businesses hurting because of the loss of riders, or a little bit of each?
I think they are hurting because of the loss of riders. Most of these small communities have, you know, some of them have no cases whatsoever. I would say more of the latter, where I think it's really hurting them. you know, it's they're not in places where you can have big super spreader events, things like that.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, speaking of people with needs, part of your motivation for this ride has to do with helping a nonprofit. Why don't we launch into that?
Yeah, when I started planning for this ride about a year ago, I wasn't planning on doing the ride for anything other than just for Mel, getting on my bike and riding. Things change. And as I got more into the planning, more people started asking me if I was going to ride for a cause, would I ride for their cause? Would I ride for a different cause? And I landed on riding for the youth services programs of the Sandpoint Rotary Club. I'm the immediate past president of the Rotary Club. We have about 100 members. Rotary is just a phenomenal international and local organization. And our local club does a lot with education and with youth. And most of our major fundraisers for the year have been canceled. For example, we had to cancel our Chafe 150 bike ride. We had to cancel our annual dinner play gala themed Kentucky Derby dinner. A lot of things like that have happened. So clearly we'll not be able to raise as much money as those big events. But anything that I can raise will really go to supporting youth in our community.
Now, so for the folks who are supporting you, are they supporting you with a flat amount or is it per mile? And if it's per mile, you got to get up to that 5,000, don't you?
Well, I've asked everybody to consider supporting me at a penny a mile or $50. So the 5,000 miles would equal the $50. Some people have done less. Some people have done way more than that. We've raised about $7,500, which is a great amount. I really can't tell you how thankful I am to how generous people have been in continuing to support the ride. But to give you an example of some of these programs, we support the Book Trust. The Book Trust is a local nonprofit. They provide a book a month during the school year to every first through third grader. And, you know, with the school year having been terminated, the libraries closed, kids need books more than ever right now. And those books will get to those kids, whether they're in school, remotely learning, or the libraries are closed. But that's one example. Others are, you know, we're one of the largest funders of scholarships for graduating seniors. We're heavily involved in helping with Food for Our Children, which is the backpack program for kids having food on weekends. Our big Chafe ride supports the after-school reading and literacy program. We do some vocational, educational, technical grants. For example, we're helping the kids over at the high school with their aerospace program. We help the charter school out. So there's just a lot of things we do in addition to some leadership programs. And every little bit we can earn on my ride, and 100% of it goes to the causes. I'm fully paying for my ride by myself. It's all tax deductible. So everything we can raise will obviously help us out this year.
So do you have room for more subscribers? If someone's listening, they say, I didn't know about this until today. How can they find out more and help support you?
Yeah, they can go. I've got a website called ridewithmel.com. And on my website, I have a blog that I post on a daily basis to the extent I have internet connection. I post pictures that I take during the day. I may make some comments about things I've seen, how the day went. I might put some historical perspective in the blog that you'd never really think about. For example, a couple of days ago, I posted about the Kavanaugh Guitar Park, which is the world's largest guitar in Missouri, and it pays tribute to all of the honky-tonk joints that places that people like Conway Twitty, Elvis Presley, etc., played when they were coming up through the ranks.
So you're not doing research for the 219, and that's how you're getting the tax write-off.
No. This is I'm fully funding my trip on my own, and that's why I say it. So, if you want to donate, you still can donate. The website will stay up clearly through the end of the year, and you can just go to www.ridewithmel.com. There will be a donate button, and you can donate. That donation goes to the Sandpoint Rotary Charitable Trust, and as I said, it's 100% tax deductible.
So, Key West, obviously, second time as a destination, and of course, it has a really unique geographic location, but beyond that extreme southeast, is there a particular reason why Key West? Is there an attachment you have or feel for it?
Well, you know, it started out with me writing there in 2008, I kind of fell in love with Key West. Key West is not like anywhere else in the United States. It's kind of considers itself its own republic. It's got an interesting cast of characters, restaurants, bars, the fishing is great. I've been to Key West since I did my first ride there 4 times. I'm going to stay down there for 2 months once I get there. My family's going to come down and join us for part of the time. I've got some best friends coming down to do some ocean fishing, and it's to me, it's just a great place to relax, and it's a melting pot. Nobody really knows who you are or cares who you are.
And of course,
to a certain extent, a little bit like Northern Idaho and Sandpoint.
Yeah, and one of Key West's favorite adopted sons, Ernest Hemingway, is one of Idaho's favorite sons.
Yes. And unfortunately, his bar, because Florida's got some tight COVID restrictions, the bar that he always frequented right down from his home is currently closed because they don't serve food like many of the other bars in Key West.
Well, when you get home, you'll have to be sure to play a lot of Jimmy Buffett in the bar, I think, don't you?
Well, Margaritaville and the partying that goes on with that will probably be taking place in October. They have canceled their big October event, which I had planned on going to, called Fantasy Festival. I do believe they're going to have the World Powerboat Championships in early November, and that's always a treat to see these boats going, 150 miles an hour, flying out of the air with a helicopter above them just in case they have an accident.
Sure. Well, Mel, we know you've taken a number of trips like this across various parts of the country, and this one has been a bit different because you've gone kind of diagonally across the country. Any comments about what has been different about this trip? Any thoughts about this trip versus others?
I would say the people along the route have been, have left a lasting impression on me. They're friendly. They want to know what you're doing. They always want to talk to you, and they always want to help. And, in the world we live in, where we're fairly divided with politics and you name it, you don't see that. I haven't seen that at all. In fact, I've been in some major cities that I wasn't planning on being in. I've been involved with, rural America, and people are just good, honest, genuine people. One thing I've noticed in the South is it's always yes, ma'am, and yes, sir. People are very, very polite, and people are very interested in what you're doing and why you're doing it. And everybody seems concerned about your safety, especially being out on the road. I've ridden on some roads where no shoulders, rumble strips. In Colorado, because of the fires, I was riding on a back road in Colorado that I've ridden many times before because I used to live there. And there's hardly any traffic and no shoulders. And for 33 miles, I couldn't believe how much traffic there was. And that was because they had routed all the traffic off of Interstate 70 because of forest fires onto this back road I'm trying to ride my bike on. That was an adventure.
Yeah, those are the unexpected things that happen along the way. That's got to rank down there, one of the more gnarly ones. Any particular highlights, something that happened that was really extremely serendipitously positive?
Well, you know, I mentioned that people are very helpful. 2 days ago, I'm riding early in the morning. It's about 6:30, and there is a two cars pulled over on the side of the road, and they're trying to fix a flat tire. And this poor lady is on her way to her doctor's appointment. She doesn't have all the tools to fix the flat tire. The guy who's trying to fix it doesn't tell me that. And we couldn't figure out what to do, but we solved it by me calling my AAA membership in the state of Washington, who then put me in touch with the AAA membership in the state of Mississippi, and we got our tire fixed. And so it was, you know, it's little things like that, because I can't tell you how many people have helped me on this ride. When I started the ride, I had more flat tires than I could ever imagine. And at one point in time, I couldn't get a tire changed. So I had to have somebody help me. Now I'm an expert in how to change those tires.
Yeah, and that, you know, raises a real interesting topic I was going to ask you about, is how many flats on your bike and how have you dealt with those?
Well, I probably had a dozen flats. Most of them were in the first week and a half of the ride. Several of them were back to back to back. I have spare tubes with me, and I have a tire patch kit with me in case I run out of tubes. And you just deal with it. You know, you take everything apart, you fix the tire, and you move on.
There you go. Well, Mel, as we come to the end of this conversation, any concluding thoughts you'd like to share? I'm hoping it's all downhill from here. Maybe not so.
Well, I've got at least two more days of riding in the Alabama Hills, which is really part of the Appalachian Mountain chain. I didn't realize it came this far west. It is all downhill. You know, by the time I get to Key West, I will have gone from 2,300 feet of elevation in Sandpoint, roughly, to basically 2 feet, with about 500,000 feet of climbing in between.
Well, it sounds like you're going to have enough time there to put back on any weight you lost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm not supposing you're turning around and bicycling north after friends and family leave.
No, we are. Claudia's going to come down and see me. She's going to spend the whole 2 months with us down there. We are then going to drive up to Miami, and we're going to take the train back to Sandpoint.
Nice.
Which will be a fantastic trip in of itself.
Yeah, that'll be quite an adventure too.
Yes,
a fitting end to your already large adventure. Mel, tell us once again about your blog and about how folks can give you a donation or give, of course, contribute to Rotary, not to you, of course.
Yeah, the blog is the website is www.ridewithmel.com. All lowercase. There is a daily blog on there. All you got to do is hit the blog button, and you can see what Mel's been up to. There's also a donate button, and the donate button is all over the website, so you can't really miss it. There's a section that talks about the causes, why I'm writing, a little bit of background about me. But it's really not about me. It really is about the causes and the kids that we're able to help through our Sandpoint Rotary Club.
Very good.
You've set a high barrier for next year's fundraising for Rotary, if the COVID still exists, to set a very high bar.
Yes. Mel, I've been to the website, and for listeners who haven't been there yet, it's really worth going. You've got great photos, and it really does tell us everything about the ride. So I'd encourage listeners to go there. I'm going to conclude the interview, and I would like to thank you, Mel Dick. I'd also like to thank Don Childress for suggesting that we interview you. I want to give him an attribution for this. He's one of our volunteers here at KRFY. And for those of you listening in, this has been KRFY Community Conversations. It is our interim program that is recorded as an alternative to our live KRFY morning show, and it offers us a great opportunity to expand our horizons. So thank you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in next week as well.
Thank you, Mel.
Okay, thank you guys. Really appreciate it.